his young camel, Al-Mataya, and looked across the dunes, north to where Ghadames lay, east across the Ubari Sand Sea, south to the Acacus Mountains. But he could only see the haze of the day bubbling on the horizon, heat melting the edges of land and sky. At first, Ezeel heard nothing beyond the snort of the beast and a dry clicking sound from its throat, and the suck of the sand as the animal stepped along the ridge. When it came, the sound carried high, a whine, insistent and far off, then louder, closer. He looked up and saw the fighter jet as it passed overhead, a dark gray shadow against the haze of the skies. The jet shot out of view, smaller, higher once more, the sound dwindling. The boy waited. He waited for the sound of dropping bombs in the distance, with an echo that would shake the valley. He waited for more planes in the sky, but they did not come. His camel, tired of waiting, pulled his head to the side and walked on, following an invisible path back toward the tents. The boy wondered what it would be like to pilot such a plane, to fly at speed and altitude, to hold the fortunes of whole villages and valleys under the pressure of your thumb, tensed on a control stick. Out here in the Ubari Desert, they had no television. But once when he had traveled with his father to Ghat for a cousin's wedding, he had sat in a row with all the children, while the adults ate and danced and celebrated. And he had sucked on sweet dates while watching Top Gun on a large screen. He, along with all the boys, apart from one, had fallen in love with Kelly McGillis. The refusenik was his cousin, Hassan, who loved goose, though he told no one of his feelings, only repeating, "I feel the need for speed," over and over, falling about laughing. His uncle, Ahmed, had beaten Hassan and offered Ezeel a job selling mats to tourists in Ghat if he wanted to stay on in the town, leave behind the desert life as they had chosen to do. But his father would not accept, and they had traveled back to Ubari. He had been sick on reaching his mother, the sugar heavy in his belly, the memory of the movie fresh in his mind. The noise began again. The low, far-off hum, the growl of approach. And for a moment, the boy grew fearful. He was alone. The tents were at least an hour away. He feared for his family, even though the planes were meant to protect. That is what they said on the radio. Sky devils, his father called them, spitting in the sand. The boy felt the inescapability of it all. He could not hide, could not run. He would not be able to warn them. So instead, he just watched, looking up, his hand over his eyes, the pale cotton of the cloth cheche he wore loosely on his head flapping in the light breeze, as it wrapped around his cheeks and over his nose, leaving only his eyes exposed to the wind and light. The plane flew high above him. For a moment, it paused in the air, then a sound of stuttering. And the jet plane began to spiral downward, as if it had forgotten how to fly. As it hurtled towards the dunes, the boy saw the pilot eject, dangling for a moment in the sky, then dropping, his canopy opening late, the bulk of it dragging him along the dunes. Further away, the jet plane burst into flames, sending up smoke signals far into the valley. Ezeel had watched the man fall from the sky. Others would look for him, the boy was sure of that. But he had never seen one of these sky devils up close, and he would not be robbed of the opportunity. So Ezeel, even though closer now to home, turned and set out for the ridge where the parachute billowed. The pilot lay twisted in the desert dunes, his body torqued, his breathing faint. Lips crusted in sand. Behind him, in the distance, smoked the wreckage of the jet. The man's arms and shoulder blades were pulled back at a sharp angle, weighted by the billowing of the parachute. He had not had enough time to control his landing, and instead had hit the dunes, dragged along by the heavy rig until it had dropped to the sand, air filling the canopy late, and he had become tangled in it.